numbers. His QBR when he won the MVP was 117.1. Last year,
not nitpicking. That's quarterback rating. The quarterback rating and QBR is two different things.
Okay, no, you're right. So his QBR was 79.4 when he won the MVP.
I don't know what the hell that means. Like I said, I don't know.
Let's just
go
by the rate. Yeah. Isn't that the one we usually go by?
Yeah, the rating is what we usually use. QBR rating is different.
Well, forget QBR. Yeah. QBR throw it out, can go to hell.
Because no one knows what the hell it means.
Airing every day from noon to 3.
He had a QBR of 117. Went back to average in 2017.
But QBR, he had a rating of 117.
Jesus Christ. He had a rating of 117. We still call it the quarterback rating, though, don't
I know,
we?
But you don't shorten it to QBR.
What the hell is the QBR?
No one knows!
Jesus.
I'm 1340 WKGN.
I have a definition if you want it.
You can read it to me. I've read it a million times. I still don't know what the hell it means. To be fair, I don't really know what the hell quarterback rating means either. Hour 2 kicking off in the White Claw Studios. Hour 2 headlines. Intern Draven, what do you got?
All right. Week 1, the awards came out. NFC, AFC Players of the Week. Starting with the AFC, we had Lamar Jackson getting the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. Pretty dominant against the Cleveland Browns. AFC Defensive Player of the Week was a little bit of a surprise. It was Casey Hayward.
Jeffrey Simmons?
No Jeffrey Simmons. No Jadeveon Clowney. No. Kevin Byard, nobody from the Titans, surprisingly enough.
If Byard would have caught that interception at the end of the game, he might have gotten it. He dropped that one with like 8 seconds left. If he had a forced fumble and a pick, he might have gotten it.
Well, Casey Hayward didn't even have an interception. But he did have 12 tackles, 2 passes defended, and obviously the Chargers played pretty well against Joe Burrow in the Bengals. I thought they could have gave it to C.J. Henderson from Jacksonville, the corner.
He had a pick, right?
Yeah, he did have a pick. He picked off Phillip Rivers. Then he had the big play at the end where he kind of knocked it out of T.Y.'s hands.
Was he the one who knocked it out of T.Y.'s hands?
So I thought they could have gave it to him, but, you know, it is what it is.
I think this is the fifth time in 9 weeks that Lamar's won Offensive Player of the Week.
That's ridiculous.
Like, he's batting over 50%. Just I'm probably going to be the best player in the AFC this week on offense.
And the NFC Player of the Week was Russell Wilson. Sorry, Cam. Russell Wilson.
Sorry, we wanted to help him get the awards.
And the Defensive Player of the Week in the NFC was Ryan Kerrigan. He had 2 sacks and the fumble recovery. You could have gave probably the whole Washington defensive line if you wanted to. They were absolutely dominant Sunday. So those were your NFL Players of the Week. Speaking of another injury, you talked a little bit about Michael Thomas's injury. Also, Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell, we know he had the hamstring issue. He also got placed on IR, so he's going to be out for 3 weeks.
The short-term IR?
Yeah, he is.
Not to go back to fantasy football, but I got offered a trade for Le'Veon Bell, or to give me Le'Veon Bell. And all I wanted was Darius Slayton from the Giants.
Yeah.
I mean, so just take that one, right? I wanted to make sure that it's just a three-week IR.
Yeah, it's just a three-week IR.
I have receivers. I have receivers in that league.
If you have excess receivers, then yeah.
But need running back depth.
I have an excess in receivers. I was debating on accepting that, but last night I was doing it like at midnight, and I was like, you know what? I better wait and make sure that Le'Veon's just on the three-week IR. So it's just 3 weeks?
Just 3 weeks, yep. But then, I mean, it is a hamstring injury, so you don't really know. I feel like hamstrings are kind of hard to predict.
And Slayton's going to have a great year this year, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Especially like Golden Tate.
Golden Tate just...
I mean.
So you're saying no on Slayton? Let me see.
I'm going to say if you're
I think I got wide receiver depth, but actually let me look, because I don't know if I actually have wide receiver depth. I got Odell. No, I don't have wide receiver depth. Odell is my number one. Never mind. I don't have wide receiver depth. I got Odell, Keenan Allen. Which I don't like what I saw from Ken Allen. Like, I mean, having Tyrod Taylor out there throwing it.
Needs Herbert. Give me Herbert.
I got AJ Green, Will Fuller, Robbie Anderson.
It's better. Getting better as it kind of goes on. Based on week one, I guess.
I do Will Fuller, Robbie Anderson, and Darius Slayton.
Make that my new three.
Trio. Kick Odell out of here. And Keenan Allen.
I know. I'm going to give Odell one more week.
I was about to say, at least see what
I'm
going to
give him one more week against the Bengals, and we'll see.
If he doesn't do good against the Bengals, then I think that's it.
My team is not good in this league. I got Devin Singletary and Derrick Henry as my running backs, too. And Ronald Jones.
What did you draft?
Who did you draft first, Derrick Henry?
Really?
I think the Jets held the Bills running backs to under 2.5 a carry.
So was Josh Allen.
Who did I draft first in this league? I guess Derrick Henry would have had to be my first round pick, right?
Derrick Henry, but then who did you draft second? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Odell?
Like Odell.
I hope not, but I mean.
Yeah, I hope not.
Too. Oh, no. I made a trade in this league. I remember now. I drafted Josh Jacobs, number one, and I traded him for Derrick Henry, which probably a mistake. I dropped, well, it was Jacobs and.
Say it ain't so.
Who did I trade? I traded Jacobs and Eckler for Henry and Keenan Allen, which in hindsight.
Oh, my gosh.
Might not have been a good one in hindsight.
Oh, no.
I thought, yeah.
Was this probably an auction draft?
No. I drafted. I made a mistake there.
So who did you, I'm still trying to figure out who you drafted
Eckler.
Second.
I think I drafted Jacobs Eckler
and
second.
If you had Jacobs.
I don't like Eckler, though, but it was probably a bad trade.
Oh, no.
Yikes. That's embarrassing.
That's a little rough, yeah.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
What was the process there? Was there a plan? Or?
My plan was that I had running backs, I think, and I wanted another wide receiver, I think was my plan. Because I had, like, when I got to the end of it, I had Odell Beckham and, like, Robbie Anderson and, like, Will Fuller and A.J. Green. I was like, I need another wide receiver. And I thought Keenan, I was like, he'll be good this year, but I didn't really take fully into account how just bad Tyrod is.
Tyrod, not Tyrod.
He's Tyrod until further proven.
Did you win your matchup?
And I was like, I did win. I believe I'm 1-0 this week.
Okay.
No, I'm not. I only scored 108 points. I got beat by 30 points.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to need Lamar, and I'm going to need Lamar to carry me. I need Henry to get going. Plus, my thought process, honestly, if you really want to know what it was, I don't have Derrick Henry in my leagues. I was like, I want Derrick Henry in one of my leagues. That's really what my thought process was, to be honest.
Yeah.
I went 9-1 in fantasy this week.
I see you. It's not bad.
You went 0-1 in real football.
Oh, it's okay.
We ain't gonna talk about that.
Still getting 11.
I went 1-3.
Sorry, your next headline.
Anyways, we're gonna stick in the NFL.
I'm the league manager. I need to go back and say it was unfair and just put the teams back the way they were.
Yeah, you should.
My kid hit the wrong button.
Especially
as
Jacobs dropped 30-something points this week.
He dropped 30 points? How many touchdowns?
He had three touchdowns.
Yeah, 35.6.
I mean, he had to be close. Yeah, I mean.
35.6, I'm pretty sure. He was the second highest. Wow. Devontae Adams was the highest.
Yeah, I have them both on one of my teams.
But anyways, so the 49ers, they're going to be signing former Patriots wide receiver Mohamed Sanu. Sanu making a little.
Speaking of terrible
trades.
I knew
it would happen. Yeah.
Yeah, so Sanu. Like you said, he got traded to the Patriots last year. That did not work out at all. And the 49ers, they have a ton of injuries at receiver. So this kind of makes sense to give the old veteran one more chance. Cam, what do you think about Sanu? He played in Atlanta for a while.
Yeah, he was good there because he had a quarterback that actually knows how to throw the ball instead of Tom Brady at age 40-something.
Yeah.
So it was fine there. He has an elite arm as well if you want to. If Garoppolo's struggling, run Sanu out there. He's got an insanely high quarterback rating and stuff throughout his career, but I like Sanu. He's a good possession guy.
Yeah, and another
Shanahan's familiar with him, so.
Oh yeah, that's true. Didn't even think about that. That's true. So that could be a good little fit there. And then another receiver that was kind of in the news was Allen Robinson. I mean, he unfollowed all of the Bears' social media on his Instagram, and people kind of freaked out about it. But his agent Brandon Parker did come out and say that he has not requested a trade. But however, Robinson, who is in the last year of his contract, is unhappy. With that Chicago's unwilling to pay him market value for wide receivers.
They probably think he is worth a lot more money than he actually is.
Yeah. And when you have all these receivers like Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins getting these contracts,
maybe Allen Robinson could be as good as Keenan Allen. Like, I don't know. Like, he's obviously not as good as DeAndre, but was that the first receiver you said?
Yeah.
Obviously not as good as Hopkins, who got that big contract extension, but you know, on the right team, Allen Robinson might be as good as Keenan Allen. But if you're the Bears also, you're like, do we need to pay him if we got Mr. Trubisky as our quarterback? Do we actually need to pay a big-time receiver? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what the Titans do with Corey Davis if he keeps balling. If they try to work out an extension, probably not. I would say not, but I wonder what kind of contract he'll get because he looked good week one. He's a top five. You know, he was a top five pick in the draft. So I think he'll be in a similar situation as Allen Robinson's where I'm getting at both those receivers going to hit the market around the same time.
Mm-hmm. So here's a couple of interesting stats that came out of week one. So week one, they had 87 combined offensive touchdowns. That was the most in NFL history in a week one. 87 combined. No preseason, had a lot of touchdowns, so looked fresh there. But the other side of it, the kickers, they had it rough in week one. 19 missed field goals in week one, and that's the most since 20 was missed in 1982. And this 71.6 accuracy in week one was the worst in the NFL since 1998.
Didn't we have that? Didn't we have kickers saying that, though?
That they would struggle a little
bit?
Yeah,
didn't we have kickers saying?
Yeah, I feel like a couple did say
I feel like
that.
We had a report.
Somebody
like
said
headline.
With no fans was going to
throw
them off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The kickers were like, hey, this is going to change the air like in the stadium. This is going to like change
And
things.
We laughed at first.
And they're like, you know what? Let's prove it, everybody. Go shake your kicks to the left.
Can't relate.
So you think it's more pressure with no
Young
fans?
Young Hoo missed a kick too, bro.
He did?
Yeah.
No, not Koo.
He missed a kick. I don't know. Yeah, he missed
an extra point.
Can't relate. Yeah, you can. He missed the extra point.
Wasn't missing field goals, though. The stat was a field goal stat.
He made up for it with the onside kick.
He does get
the
onside kick.
So, kind of made up.
His sins are always forgiven.
He's a gimmick kicker. He's not a good field goal kicker. He is a below average field goal kicker, but he has an elite skill.
I feel like you got a lot of room to talk right now with the way you
Please don't disrespect my kicker.
I enjoy having a bad kicker. I wear like a badge of honor. We're like Alabama.
249 yarders. He's a good kicker.
You remember how Alabama just wins without kickers? That's what the Titans do. We have like a really long streak going of like scoring touchdowns inside the 5-yard line. My offense scores touchdowns. We don't rely on field goals, okay? Because we can't rely on field goals, but we score touchdowns. I wear it like a badge of honor. We were the first team, I think I'd say we're the first team that won, had a winning record. We were actually the only team, I think, of all of the 2010s. I saw stats. Like maybe all the 2010s that we were the only team that had a kicker make less than half of his attempts last year. We were like 8 of 18 from field goal range last year.
Wow.
Or something crazy like that. Like, we wear it like a badge of honor.
So it was Ryan Suckup, and then he got hurt.
Yeah.
Right?
Greg Joseph was good, though, whenever he came in. The kicker we had, like, at the last, like, 4 or 5 games, we still didn't have to use him because I don't know if you guys knew this. The Titans' offense was a juggernaut at the end of last year. Yeah. We weren't really having to kick field goals. But, like, he was, like, 2 for 2 or something like that and didn't miss any extra points.
Was Kerryo Santos in there at one point?
Yeah.
Didn't he play against Buffalo and miss
and
all those
awful.
Field goals?
Yeah.
Yeah. He missed, like, 2 or 3.
Suckup was awful and kept getting blocked and didn't have any leg. And then we brought Kairo Santos in, and he was awful. So then we cut him, and then, like, we went with Greg Joseph, and he just had to kick extra points because when your offense scores touchdowns, you don't have to kick field goals.
Right. Extra points are no gimmies, though, anymore.
No,
poor
kickers. I don't think he missed any. I think he was, like, solid. Definitely didn't miss any in the playoffs, so can't complain there.
It's gonna be interesting to see if there's any moves with kickers. I feel like there's a lot that's kind of struggling. The Browns already made a move at kicker earlier this week.
I don't know. Who the hell do you sign? Like, I mean, like,
that's true. I don't know. I just feel like there's an abundance of kickers out there. That
at the same time, it feels like there's not enough kickers because we just said they all stink. So like, how can we say there's an abundance when we don't even have 30?
That's true.
I mean, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, it should be a competitive job where you could find someone that can go out and do the job. Like, if your guy can't do it, you can bring in someone who can. But again, if those guys can't do the job and they beat the guys out that don't have the job, like, how good are those guys that got beat out? Should have just kept Greg Joseph, honestly. I mean, he did fine.
Yeah. That's all you
Although
need.
We did sign the guy with the fifth most accurate kicker of all time.
Did you say he dropped down the list, though?
He's like number 9 now, yeah.
Yeah,
but he was number 5.
Yeah, he dropped down the list. How brutal is that for him?
Maybe somebody will bring in Adam Vinatieri.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But my thing is with kickers, like once you lose it, you usually don't get it back. The only person I've seen do that is Mason Crosby because, you know, we're talking about the Titans and Gostkowski. He was the first kicker since Mason Crosby to miss 3 kicks and an extra point when Mason Crosby did it in 2018. Because for a while, I don't know if you guys remember, but it looks like the Packers would have to get rid of him because he just like got the shanks. But he worked through it, and he's been pretty good since then. So like he's the only guy I've seen lose it and get it back. So maybe Gostkowski can get it back too. It was his first game after injury, so maybe there's
– It's like a golf swing. It's like once you just lose that confidence, it's like you can't get it back. It's like it gets in your head.
But then you hit a good shot, and maybe you get going again. Yeah. So he hits the game winner. It was a chip shot, but he hits
it
the game winner.
Shot, yeah.
I mean, it was the definition of a chip shot. I'm not going to –
If he missed that, it'd been –
Oh, if he missed it,
he's gone.
Yeah, he might have killed himself. Like I don't know what his mental health is like. He looks sad on the sideline, but like maybe he gets it back, and maybe now he gets a couple short kicks under his belt. And, you know, maybe not. And then maybe the Titans sign Samaglia next year, and then we're good to go.
Set. That would be set, huh? Coming from the other Monday night game, Big Ben, a little bit older and feeling a little bit rough after that performance against the Giants. He said after the game, came out and said yesterday that I was saying today I feel like I just was just in a car accident. He said yesterday I feel like I was in a train wreck. Hopefully tomorrow it'll feel like I just fell off a bike, he said. So this, I feel like this is a little bit more concerning, the fact that after just 1 week and a 16-week season, you say you feel like you got in a car accident. I mean, I know.
It's even weirder because he was in a car accident. I don't know if you guys remember when he cracked his skull wrecking his motorcycle. Like
When was that?
Like 2004 or 5. Yeah. It was couple years after the Super Bowl, and like it was right before like the allegations. There was a while like Big Ben was the bad boy, and you didn't know if he could like be a franchise quarterback. Yeah. But like, yeah, he cracked his skull. He wasn't wearing a helmet on a motorcycle and like went through a windshield or something crazy like that.
Jeez.
It was a little weird to see him say it feels like a car accident because he would know.
Yeah. But I feel like this is a little bit concerning. Like I said, I mean, 16 weeks in a season.
He's old.
But, I mean, he's got 15 more games
left.
How's he going to make it?
I wouldn't want my quarterback saying that after week one. I get it. But I'm just saying, I mean, that's just the reality of having an old quarterback.
Yeah, I guess so.
I feel like he didn't even get sacked that much, did he?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I feel like he didn't get hit that much or anything.
He did have, like, the 8-yard scramble or whatever. But
I guess that's what got him. I guess he just... After that 8-yard run, that's what
he's like, I'm just gonna throw it out of bounds next time. I'm not gonna run.
It was long on a field goal. We're fine. It's a long game. I'll take 3 points here. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the Clippers collapse next. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Iris Networks, if you're a business owner, upgrade your fiber network with our friends from Iris Networks. You can give them a call at 865-448-IRIS or go online at irisnetworksusa.com. Do business at the speed of light. Internet and voice services connected by their world-class fiber network to give you the features you need to run your business at the price that fits your budget. Speaking of budget, speaking of world-class, speaking of aspirations, man, the Clippers had some championship aspirations. At least we thought. Although last night, Paul George, after the loss, was like, you know what? It wasn't championship or bust internally with us. We knew we hadn't been around each other enough time. And you're like, you know what? That's really funny because you guys have been doing a whole lot of woofing about being the champions. Patrick Beverley told everyone the next 5 years are his years. You had things like that happening. Marcus Morris doing a lot of woofing. Montrezl Harrell calling himself the modern-day Dennis Rodman. All bunch of things that the Clippers said during the season, during the playoffs. They mocked Dame Lillard, only to blow a 3-1 lead and get completely dominated in three straight second halves. That Nuggets team won their sixth straight elimination game, made NBA history by being the first team to come back from 2-3-1 deficits. And the Clippers, who I sat on here for a year, I can't believe everyone's crowning the Clippers as the champion. Like, I don't see it with this team and the flaws they have. Those flaws came out last night in the fourth quarter when it looked like no one could get a shot for anybody else. It was, hey, Paul George, you try to drive and throw something at the rim. Hey, Kawhi, you try your little step back. Lou Will, see if you can go one-on-one and score. No one except Jamichael Green looked ready for the challenge, and that is a big problem if Jamichael Green is the only one that looks ready for the challenge. You combine that with one of the losingest, most choking coaches in NBA history, Doc Rivers. And what you get is a recipe for disaster. Doc Rivers made bad history last night, becoming tied with Pat Riley for most losses by a coach in postseason history with a chance to clinch the series. They both have 27. The problem is Pat Riley was 40 and 27 in those games. Like, he had a lot of chances to close out series. He did so 40 of the 67 times. Doc Rivers, on the other hand, has 27 losses and only 14 victories. Having 27 losses out of 67 games isn't bad. Having 27 losses out of 41, that is bad. Doc Rivers' 8 losses in game 7s are 3 more than any other coach. And he became the only coach in NBA history to blow multiple 3-1 series leads, and he has done it 3 times. What is it I said on Monday, Draven? Losing teams just do losing things?
Yeah.
There is no franchise that is as big of losers as the Los Angeles Clippers. I don't know if you guys saw the graphic they put up last night. Like, this was the 50th Clippers season I mean, it goes back to like when they were in like Buffalo and like San Diego as like the Braves or whatever, or the I think that was the name. I think they were the San Diego Braves, I think is what they were called. Maybe it's Buffaloes though, or something like that. Was it Braves?
Yeah, it was Braves.
Okay. This is their 50th season. They have zero conference finals appearances.
Nice.
And like the next closest was like the Charlotte Hornets, who have like 30 years. Like, we're not talking about winning a championship. We're not even talking about winning the West. We're talking about just getting to this third round. Like, they have never had a season where they won two playoff series in 50 years.
That's unreal.
And, like, for a good portion of it, they've been in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're doing this in, like, Minnesota. It's not like they're the Oklahoma City Thunder, where you couldn't, you know, recruit a free agent to. You're in Los Angeles, bro. It's sunny there. 50 years and they can't win two playoff series. They had three chances this round and they couldn't do it. They gagged and choked. And hey, look, guys, everyone who tried to say Kawhi Leonard was on the level of LeBron James after last year, they should feel ashamed of themselves. And I don't even know if I said it or not, because I got caught up in Kawhi stuff last year too. But what you saw this year was Kawhi maybe not ready for all that pressure. Like, maybe Kawhi was it's easier to chill when you're surrounded by good players and, you know, Kyle Lowry, and you're up in Toronto and you're kind of faceless and you don't have the pressure, because no one was really putting Kawhi on that same level last year.
No.
I mean, people thought of him as a top five, top ten player. I mean, just because off of what he did in San Antonio, and there's that one year where he could have won MVP and he was a finals MVP and all that. But, like, he was the unquestioned alpha on this team. And they have another just all-time collapse. And if Kawhi was held to the same standard as LeBron James, we'd be crushing him.
Yeah.
Like, if LeBron came out and played the game that Kawhi played last night, with the season on the line, with history on the line, with a 3-1 collapse on the line, these guys scored 33 points in one half of basketball with everything on the line.
Jeez.
Kawhi Leonard went 6 of 22. He scored 14 points. And somehow, he was the highest, like, starter they had. I mean, only Montrezl Harrell had more points than him.
Wow, Montrezl Harrell leading your team in scoring. Exactly what you want in the Game 7.
Credit to Montrez. Like, I mean, he still didn't have a good plus-minus. And, like, you know, the Jokic minutes, they still lost those minutes. But, man, like, you at least showed up. You sucked all playoffs, but you showed up in Game 7. You tried hard. You had 20 points. While everyone else was maxed out at 14. And again, I feel like I was pretty consistent on this all year. Like, I looked around, I was like, hey, why are we saying, everyone was saying it. Like, smart basketball people were saying it. Some of the people that are the most respected in the world were saying, Clippers are the best team, Clippers winning the championship. And you look around last night, and at what point did it hit you that, wait, their third best player is Lou Williams?
Lou Will?
Like, at what point did that hit people? Because at a certain point, you should look around and say, wait a second. Playoff P, okay, I mean, Playoff P is going to do what Playoff P does, and he was 4 for 16 last night, and I think he was 0 for 5 in the fourth quarter with two turnovers, and he looked awful, and he looked like he didn't want to shoot. And he shot the ball off the backboard from a corner three. Like, he missed it by 3 feet. And you look around, you're like, who are we trying to get offense from? If it's not JaMychal Green, like, it's Lou Williams out here dribbling around, like, and that's not going to work. Shout out to the Nuggets though, man. Like,
they're gamers,
and they kept saying they didn't have any pressure, and they kept saying that they didn't care. And there was a moment, I believe it was 56 to 40 in Game 5, when Marcus Morris told Paul Millsap to get his ass ready to go home. Paul Millsap responded. That was right before halftime. Paul Millsap came out in that third quarter and scored 14 points and got the Nuggets back in it, and the rest was history. That Nuggets team has been talked about for the last couple of years as being, okay, this is the team of the future. This team is talented. They're so good, blah, blah, blah. And we hadn't really seen it until it mattered this year, and they've come up clutch. And you saw the best 5 of 13 performance you'll ever see.
Yeah, 5 of 13, yet he dominated the game.
Nikola Jokic was 5 of 13, 0 for 4 from 3, and yet he was by far the best player on the court. He had 16 points. He had 22 rebounds. He had 13 assists. He controlled the game. while being fat and out of shape and unathletic, and he still dominated that game. And if he wasn't the best player, it was his teammate Jamal Murray, which, by the way, remember when everyone was over the Clippers defense?
Yep.
Oh, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and Patrick Beverley, you throw those guys out there and teams aren't going to be able to score. Tell that to Jamal Murray, who just dropped 40 points on their head.
In their mouth.
He just dropped 40 points right on their head.
He outscored all sorts of tough shots.
He outscored Paul George and Kawhi Leonard by himself. He almost doubled them up.
He outscored them in the second half.
His total
was better than their whole second half. Yeah.
Well, I mean, his second quarter was almost as good as their whole second half was. He had 25. I think he had 22 like in the second quarter alone. Maybe it was just 20, but either way, he shot them back in that game. And then what you saw in the fourth quarter, I don't remember seeing anything like it. Maybe since, like, I think you have to go back to 2010.
Yep.
I really think you have to go back to 2010 when the Cavs got eliminated in Game 6 to the Celtics, and then LeBron ripped his jersey off and left. As to when you saw a team that was the title favorite just look completely overwhelmed by the moment.
They looked lost.
That fourth quarter was sad to watch. Like, I was taking pleasure in it because, like, I've been railing against the Clippers all year, but, like, they couldn't score. They didn't have a field goal for 8 minutes in the fourth quarter.
That's not winning basketball.
And it looked like no one wanted to be out there except Jermichael Green.
He was just happy to be included.
He was like, hey, man, this is my time to shine. I got the only 4 points of the quarter for, like, the first 8.5 minutes. It's just me out here. It was surreal to watch. And you see Doc Rivers on the sideline trying to stand up and encourage his team, and, like, his head's just hanging, and they can't do anything.
Jamal just throwing stuff up, and it just drops in every time.
They can't get a stop, and they can't get a bucket. That's the worst combo.
Jamal's over here just throwing up fadeaway threes and stuff, deep threes, and they're all dropping. Yeah, no, they looked lost, and they looked in shock in that fourth quarter for sure. They had no idea what to do. I mean, yeah, they just every time they came down the court, miss after miss after miss.
What you saw was the weight of the world crumbling on someone's shoulders. That's what you saw in that second half.
That's what anxiety looked like.
They came out, they got up 7, and then you're like, okay, here's might be their chance where they kind of take off. And then Murray hit a 3, and then Jeremy Grant came down and hit a couple threes. Mm-hmm. And next thing you knew, the Nuggets were up. And from that moment on, you're like, oh, no, these boys ain't got it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you saw was a team playing stuck in the mud. They were in quicksand, and they just kept sinking and sinking and sinking. And somehow, playing against Nikola Jokic, they still looked a step slow, which is amazing because Nikola Jokic plays as slow as you can play. But again, he dissected them, and he won that game.
They were waddling around like him in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, except he looks good when he does it.
Yeah.
He looks smooth when he does it. When Jokic is out there waddling around, he looks smooth. He looks in control. When the Clippers do it, they look lethargic. And you saw Kawhi do what I don't think a lot of us thought Kawhi did, at least what we gave him credit for last year. Kawhi was out there searching for contact. He was flopping around. He was falling down after every jumper, trying to draw a foul because he couldn't get nothing to go.
Yep.
And he was flailing and falling, trying to draw contact, trying to get a whistle, trying to get bailed out, and the refs were like, nope, play on. Which was nice to see because everyone always talks about how the NBA's rigged and how everyone wants that LA series.
Yeah.
They looked at him and said, no thanks, bro. We're getting Nuggets versus Lakers. Which will be fun. I mean, they played a couple close games this year. I believe 2 games went into overtime or at least got close to overtime. That'll be fun. I don't think the Nuggets can beat the Lakers. The Lakers are coming in as almost, I think, 1-5 favorites. They're like -500 to win the series. But it'll be fun.
Yeah, no, should be some good scoring and stuff for sure, I'd say.
I just think the big man trio that the Lakers have is going to be too much for Jokic.
Mm-hmm. They're too athletic for him.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, the Clippers didn't have any big men.
Yeah.
And the big men they have aren't good. Like, if you want to call Montrezl Harrell big man, that's fine, but he doesn't pose anything except dunks. Like, all he can do is roll to the rim and dunk. Like, Anthony Davis, if Jokic is having to guard him, that's not going to be a fun time for Jokic.
Mm-mm.
And then, like, even at the same time, you can throw Dwight and JaVale out there, and they're athletic enough to run to the rim while also – at least Dwight will be able to bother Jokic defensively.
Yep.
I do wonder who the Lakers are going to put on Murray. I guess it'll be a combo of KCP, Rondo, and Caruso. Like, hope that those guys in their long arms can bother
slow
him.
Slow him down, yeah. At least.
And, you know, eventually you're going to run into the fact that they've had to play 14 games this playoffs already, whereas the Lakers have played 10, and the Lakers have been chilling for almost a week now. They haven't had any high-pressure situations, right? Like, I mean, the Lakers lost game ones and then dominated the next, you know, four games of both series. They haven't really had any high-pressure situation. Meanwhile, the Nuggets have been fighting for their lives. I think eventually the talent and the fatigue will win out, and the Lakers win this series probably in five or six games.
Yeah, you would think. I thought the Nuggets were going to be fatigued in this game. Not this game, but the series. Well,
I think they were fatigued in the series early on, but then at a certain point, like, the Clippers just, the moment either got too big for them, or they, like, they did what they did all year, which was we can flip the switch whenever we want. Mm-hmm. That was what was so frustrating about them. They would be really dominant in some stretches, and other times they would look like they didn't care. And Cam, they got up 3-1, and then up by 15 points, and they're like, all right, we don't care right now. And the Nuggets are like, okay, our time to shine, let's go. And if I'm LeBron right now, I'm not letting this moment pass. Like, you have to be looking, if you're him right now, is thinking, the only team that people thought could beat me, the only guys, like, because Kawhi would have given LeBron some defensive problems.
Yeah.
If I'm LeBron, I'm like, okay, Jeremy Grant's not going to stop me.
No.
Not, Paul Millsap ain't going to stop me.
Michael Porter Jr. definitely ain't going to stop
me. Nobody on that team can stop me defensively. They have no LeBron stopper. They have nobody that even looks like a LeBron stopper. If I'm him, I could taste that fourth title. And if you get that fourth title, all of a sudden you start looking around, you're like, okay, could they squeeze out two more? If you're LeBron, you're like, hey, if I get this one, I can get to six. I can get to six. I can do that, and I got to get to six, and I can do it. That fourth one's going to feel big too, though, right? Like having three different championships with three different franchises.
Yeah.
Doing it in an unprecedented bubble, which you can either look at it from one perspective and say it cheapens the title. I think it makes it just as impressive, if not more. Because it's not like the Lakers would have had to go on the road. Like, they had home court advantage. And it's not like the Clippers crowd would have let them win that game last night. They would have been even more afraid, as the Clippers crowd is just groaning after every missed shot. If you're LeBron, you can taste it. Like, the Nuggets ain't stopping you. And then you're looking like that Celtics team doesn't seem mature enough to go, and that Heat team, it'll be a battle, but you're like, hey, I'm better than Jimmy Butler. Like, I'm not letting Jimmy Butler alpha me. I keep calling Jimmy Butler the alpha of the East, because he is not the alpha of the league. And if I'm LeBron James, I'm still like, hey, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm LeBron, like, I'm celebrating last night, and I am feeling like I can taste that fourth championship.
Yeah. The waves have parted for him, for
sure. Yeah, I mean, they're opened up. Which, I mean, it's funny because they have parted, and now people might talk about how easy it was. But keep in mind, just two or three weeks ago, we were talking about how they were playing the best 8 seed ever. Remember that?
Yeah.
And how they lost game one. Everyone's like, the Blazers are going to win. Sweet. Yeah. Blazers are going to win. They're better. Nah. And then like, oh, MVP, James Harden. Here we go. Rockets going to give them a challenge. Way tougher than with the Nuggets and Clippers. No. No, that was done in five. So if I'm him, I'm licking my chops.
Yeah.
And then, like, whoever he plays out of the East will be, a fun matchup, and the storylines will be there. Lakers Celtics, LeBron Celtics, LeBron versus Tatum, or it'll be LeBron versus his old boys in Miami.
Yeah.
LeBron versus Pat Riley. Those are the two alphas of the league. How cool does Pat Riley look? That's something I noticed from last night's game. Like, him just there with the slick back hair smiling after Bam blocks that shot, and you're like, man, this guy has to feel like he is just a man.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Riley's been the man in the NBA for like the last 40 years. Since like the 80s, Pat Riley's been the man. And he's built that team as a championship, a contender on the fly.
Yeah.
And he's got him, Jimmy Butler always talks about how they're one and the same. Jimmy Butler calls Pat Riley the head of the snake. Says the head of the snake is just like the rest of the team. We follow him. Like, he's wired like I am. And I know that he's sitting there like, man, we want a chance at LeBron too, because he didn't like the way LeBron left him. That's the finals I want. LeBron versus the Heat. Butler versus LeBron. That'll be fun.
Bam AD.
Like, I mean, you are going to get your first Kentucky player winning a championship. Coach Cal's finally going to get him a title. Now, I will say, like, the least valuable title of this would be, like, the Celtics winning, because then we'd try to count Enes Kanter, even though Enes Kanter never played a minute for Kentucky. Like, he was just on the bench.
Yeah.
And couldn't get cleared. So, like, you know, they're going to say it counts, but Enos Kanter doesn't count. But if AD gets one, or Bam and Hero get one, or Jamal Murray, like, those will count.
Yeah.
Those are four of the best, probably, you know, 10, 15 players he's had at Kentucky.
And hey, Celtics win, Grant gets a ring.
And if the Celtics win, Grant gets a ring, although I do not feel like the Celtics are going to win.
I don't either. Yeah, they're my number four. We're probably number three team out of the four left.
I'd like to see them play the Nuggets. I wouldn't mind like a consolation round. Like, yeah, let's just do a third place series. That I wouldn't mind that. This has been high level basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But that was fun. And man, the Clippers just gagged. This is a complete collapse. And if you're Steve Ballmer, you can have the world, man. You can be rich and powerful and have everything you want, except the championship team in LA that's not named the Lakers. Because you own a franchise full of losers. And what do losers do, Hayden?
Lose.
They lose. They lose. Losers lose. That's just what happens. That's the moral of the story last night. You can try to put lipstick on a pig, but do you know what that still is?
Pig.
A pig. A pig with lipstick is still a pig. And the Clippers will keep being a pig. And now they only have 1 year left on those contracts, too, by the way. George and Kawhi can leave after next year. And if I'm the Clippers, I might be looking like, hey, can we just trade George now? If I'm Kawhi, you saw like some of those looks Kawhi was giving George. He's like,
yeah, he's like, I can't believe I'm playing with you.
Yeah, like, what did I do? What did I do? Like, I never thought I would miss Kyle Lowry so much.
It's like when you pick the wrong guy in like a pickup basketball game, and you're like, man, I can't believe I went with this guy.
Yeah, yeah. What was I thinking? I've been there before, trust me.
Another guy just busting y'all. You're like, man, I could have had him.
I picked you, really? I could have. Hey, if you are Kawhi, you had better options. You picked the worst of the three options you had.
Yeah.
We didn't think it at the time. We thought, like, hey, the Clippers will be better than the Raptors at least. But turns out you made the worst decision of three. You could have stayed in Toronto, and you probably would have won a championship. At least got to the finals, right? Like, yeah, that Raptors team with Kawhi would have gotten to the finals.
Because, yeah, he would have, like, even if Siaka wasn't playing, you know, Kawhi would have been getting his.
And yeah, I mean, like, they went to Game 7 with the Celtics without a closer. And, like, if you're Kawhi and you can just close for them, you would have won that round, that series.
Yep.
Or you could have gone to the Lakers and played with AD and LeBron and won a championship.
Been in the same city.
Now, granted, like, we would have said it was unfair, and we wouldn't have counted it as a real championship. Like, it would have been one that hurt both Kawhi and LeBron's legacy, probably.
Yeah.
But then you're like, no, I'm going to go to the Clippers. Let's do that. Let's play with Paul George. That'll be fun.
Playoff P.
And they gave up all those draft picks and all those draft swaps.
Oh,
and
my gosh, yeah.
Gallinari and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just to have Paul George come out and go 4 of 16. That's got to be a tough pill to swallow. Mm. But the Clippers are losers, and losers lose. Stick with us. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. All right, let's do a Major League Baseball update. This headline I see, don't love it. Don't love it at all as a very casual baseball fan, but according to Rob Manfred, the 16-team postseason is likely to remain beyond 2020. Adding that quote, an overwhelming majority of owners have already endorsed the concept even before the pandemic. And says he thinks there's a lot to commend it. Hayden, you're probably the biggest baseball fan here, I would assume. Draven, you're not a big baseball fan, right?
Yeah.
Hayden, you're the biggest baseball fan here. What do you think about the 16-team postseason staying post-pandemic?
I mean, I don't like it. I mean, we've traditionally had 10 playoff teams, which I guess you could say more than that with the wild card. Or no, it is 10. Right? Yeah, it's Tim. But I don't really like it because it's just going to affect the number one seeds because there's no bye anymore or getting the lesser team because you're going to get the 8 seed or whatever. And just like...
Well, that getting the 8 seed is better than getting the 4 or 5 seed, though.
I guess that's true. But
you're still having to win an extra round, though. So, I mean, like, it's a
anything could happen in baseball, well, though.
Especially in a three-game series. Yes. Like, that's what's going to be interesting to watch this year is, like, there's just a three-game series for the 1, 2, 3. You know, like, every – all eight teams in each league has to play a three-game series. And, you know, you can lose two games in a row pretty easily in baseball. Like, I mean, that's just – you know, 2 days of weird stuff happening.
Yeah, especially if your team, like, I know this across divisions, but say you're the Yankees, right? Not the best pitching staff, and you're going to go up against somebody like the Reds or the Nationals in a three-game series that have at least two really strong pitchers, possibly three, that are going to outduel you pitching in every game. Even though they might have better hitting, you never know what could happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, just if you look, I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, if the Mets made the playoffs, just for example.
Yeah.
And you're able to throw DeGrom and who's their number two? Do they even have a number two this year?
Syndergaard? Is he out this year?
I don't know if he's out or not. I haven't watched him. But, like, you know, they have two studs. Like, yeah. DeGrom should win you the first game. And then you have two chances the next 2 days to win. That, to me, seems like a disaster waiting to happen for, you know, if the Dodgers or the Padres or the, who's the best team in the AL this year? I mean, I know it's the Yankees preseason, but they're not even in first place right now, so I didn't know if there was a juggernaut in the AL or not. But if the Dodgers lose round one in a three-game series, because, I mean, don't the Marlins have two good pitchers?
Yeah, Pablo.
No, not him. Yeah. Don't they actually have a stud pitcher, though? I thought the Marlins actually had a stud pitcher.
I don't think so.
I thought they had a guy that could throw, like, 99 that was, like, really, really good for them. Am I wrong on that?
The rookie?
Yeah.
Sixto Sanchez?
Yeah. Isn't he a stud?
Yeah, he throws fast. I don't know.
Isn't he a stud?
I've only seen him pitch one time, and he did pitch well, but he just made his debut, like, halfway through the season. So,
Are you saying Sixto?
Sixto Sanchez.
Not, like, six toes.
No, Sixto.
Okay.
S-I-X-T-O.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if he was, like the guy that had six fingers. I didn't know if he had six toes. No, I mean, Sixto Sanchez, is he the one that throws like Pedro? They have the side-by-side where he's pitching like Pedro with the leg kick and like Pedro's his guy?
Yeah, he does. I don't know if that's
I want to say he might even have like a Pedro tattoo. Like, I think Pedro's like his hero. But I saw like the side-by-side of him like with the leg kick. He pitches just like him. Yeah. And yeah, no, he's a stud. He's a stud. He has, I mean, 32 innings pitched so far this year, but his ERA is a 1.6. That's pretty damn good.
He's a good player.
1.69. So, I mean, he's pretty damn good. So, you know, the Marlins have one stud that if you throw them in a three-game series, like, you like your chances if you're the Marlins.
Movie's coming together.
You know, but someone like the Braves are going to find themselves in trouble, even if they make it out of the first round of the three-game series. Like, I was reading that the five-game series, since they're going to be in that bubble, is just going to be every day.
And the World Series, too.
Every day. So, like, in past years where you just had to have three starters, and you could kind of, you know, the day off travel, you could kind of get some guys on short rest, and you hope that you could at least pitch your best guy again in game five if you had to.
I mean, yeah, that's what the Nationals did last year. They did Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, Sanchez,
right.
And then back with Scherzer and five.
But now, best game scenario would be, like, you could only throw your best pitcher
once.
On 3 days rest in game five. Like, he's not even getting to pitch two full games. Like, that's going to change the math here. And, again, like, the Braves, who, third best team in the NL, probably, right? I mean, like, behind the Padres and the Dodgers, probably the third best team.
Offensively, yes.
And I would say that if they thought they had a series against the Padres, they would think their chances were okay, I guess. But, you know, even then, like, they're getting some pitching back, but their pitching is still going to be an issue. But, you know, they're going to have to throw four different guys in a five-game series. They're going to throw five different guys maybe in a five-game series. You're going to have to get down to your fourth and fifth starter, which in the playoffs isn't usually the case. Very rarely do you have to throw your fifth guy, if ever. You know, you put him in the bullpen. He can get you three or four innings out of the bullpen if you need an arm. And you almost never even have to throw your fourth guy if you don't want to. I mean, I know some teams do, but some teams don't.
If you're confident in your fourth guy, you throw him. But if you're not, then you don't.
You go back to the top of rotation and say, here, just go get us six innings.
Yep.
Like, the year the Yankees won the last year the Yankees won the World Series, 2009, I guess it was, like, they just threw three guys the whole time. Like, they had CeCe, Burnett, and
wasn't it Andy Pettitte?
I want to say maybe it was Pettitte's last year. They just threw those three guys, like, we're riding with these three. We don't need a fourth or fifth guy. And the days off allowed that to happen, and CeCe being a beast that didn't need to have 4 days rest allowed that to happen, and the Yankees won a World Series that way. You're not going to be able to do that this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Braves. I mean, I really don't like the Braves, but the Braves
are the Braves.
Yeah, I hate the Braves, but they're a good team. And they're going to have to score, but they're going to have to score a ton of runs this year to get out of any of the rounds to play.
Sure.
Like, absolutely a ton.
Yeah.
But the good thing about the Braves, though, their bullpen is good, even though their starters are kind of weak.
Yeah. I mean, but even then, like, I mean, if you're playing four straight days, like, it's hard to go to the bullpen every day. Like, with your best arms. With your best arms. Like, usually, you know, you look back to the Royals when they won the World Series. Like, they had three arms in the bullpen that they could rely on every day for, you know, 2 days and then 1 day off. You can kind of let those arms, you pick them out the right way. But any bullpen, even the best bullpen, like the Yankees, for example. I don't know if they saw the best bullpen, but they did a couple years ago. I don't think they do anymore. Right? Because Betances is gone.
Yeah, he plays for the Mets.
He's the Mets now. Yeah. Is Dave Robertson, was that his name?
Still there? David Robertson.
Yeah, yeah. Is he still there?
He's still there. The Mets have the best bullpen in the league, I think.
Mets do? Well, it's not going to do them any good. Right, because they're not going to be a playoff team, right?
I guess there's still a chance.
I guess we went through that the other day. Like, everyone still kind of has a chance.
There's like three or four teams eliminated right now.
Which, by the way, keep an eye on those Reds.
Reds have good pitching.
They're hot right now. But that is a good point. Like, they have a couple guys they could throw, right? Like, if the Reds made the playoffs, like, and a three-game series, you probably wouldn't want to go up against Bauer and Castillo, right?
And Sonny Gray.
And Sonny Gray, right? Yeah. They have three guys. Like, it'd be tough to beat them in a three-game series.
Yep.
Which is really crazy that they're not better than they are. How are the Reds not better than they are?
Offensive production's been low.
I thought their lineup was supposed to be good.
Well, I mean, they went through a slump in the middle of the season.
I think the Reds' problem that I've seen this year has been just their bullpen stinks.
Yep.
They've won a lot of games.
Plus, the Cubs have been pretty dominant. So
it actually would have helped if the Reds would have faked COVID and just had to do a lot of seven-inning games. They'd win those seven-inning games. Just throw your starters out there and not have to worry about your bullpen. But I guess they're what? They're only two games back of the Marlins? One and a half game back to the back of the Phillies? Okay, the Reds aren't far back. I'd like to see them get in. Because like you said, that three-game pitching staff.
I like the Reds. I like Senzel. I wish he could stay healthy.
Reds have won four in a row. Okay. Wow, longest win streak in the NL. All right. Okay. We're back, baby. Don't let us get hot. I've always said that. Don't let the Reds get hot because...
Red hot.
Red hot, if you will. Nice contribution to the segment, Cam.
Yeah.
Cam leaned back from his chair. He took a little break off, and then he comes back in just to drop a red hot. Nice contribution. They are red hot right now. Do not let them continue to be red hot, because I've always said you do not want to go up against Bauer and Castillo and, Sonny Gray.
He might get smashed by the Dodgers, though.
Would they?
Yeah.
Those three pitchers wouldn't give them a chance?
Well, the Dodgers aren't terrible pitching either.
I know the Dodgers have good pitching. The Dodgers have good everything, but I'm just saying, like, would you not feel like that was at least an unfair matchup for a team that's clearly the best team in the NL? Like a team that's like been, well, I guess not clearly because the Padres aren't, they're only three games back, but, or two and a half games back, but like the Dodgers getting rewarded with having to face a guy. I mean, Bauer won a Cy Young, right? Or he came close to winning a Cy Young
with the Indians, right? Possibly. Yeah. I think he might have.
And Sonny Gray and Castillo are both pretty good. Like, that's a pretty bad reward. Like, hey, you got to beat two of these guys.
They have a great pitching staff. I think it would behoove them to get in the seventh spot because I just think the Dodgers lineup from top to bottom is probably one of the best baseballs ever seen.
No, I understand. I understand. So, but we know that a three-game sample size, though, is so stupid. Like, that's what I don't like about
playoff. If the Dodgers get in a slump, then the Reds will win. But if they play average to better, they will kill the Reds.
Who would be the two seed? I guess the Cubs and Braves are tied.
If you could get the Braves, I would be interested to see the Cubs in that series. Not the Cubs, but the Reds.
The Reds.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be fair for the Braves either. I mean, to be clearly better and then still have to a three-game sample. Like, that's stupid. I don't like it. Baseball does not need to do that.
I don't like it either. What I would be in favor of, I would like maybe expand it to 12 teams and have the 1 and 2 seeds with the bye or whatever. That would be okay, kind of like what football does. But I think that what they really need to do is expand the wild card game. Even though
you get a best of three?
Yeah, because the one game, I mean, the Nationals beat the Brewers last year off an error in right field.
Oh, yeah.
And we should not have
World Series championship came down to an error in right field, right?
Yeah, Soto hit a double, hit it to right field, and the guy whiffed it in right field, and it was a double.
I remember
the game in the eighth inning.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, a three-game series there would be fun.
That's what I'd like to see him do.
The six wouldn't be bad. Have two wild card, or I guess three wild. Oh, that'd be four wild card teams. Three wild card teams. So then the worst division winner still has to win a five-game series. or three-game series, whatever you did there. Okay. I don't know if I like that or not. Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three with headlines. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio live from the White Claw Studios.